time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
We're all set to go with the NHL Hour. Welcome, everyone. We're live from the NHL Store, powered by Reebok on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, as well as NHL.com. Gary Bettman, Bill Clement, we're going to answer your phone calls, your emails, all of your questions. Let me give you the phone number. It's 877-NHL on XM, 877-645-6696. Our email address is NHLHour at NHL.com. We can't wait to get to chatting with you. But before that, I mean, Gary, you walk in, first thing I hear is a format change. You knew about this before I did.
Well, actually, it's not that I knew about it. It's that we insisted upon it. We were getting some complaints from listeners who called in and were put on hold for a while because of the volume of calls. And we couldn't get to all of them. And I felt badly, and I said there were too many commercials. Cut them back. And the response from XM was, no, that's the format. And I said, fine, then we're done. And so we have a new format. And so we have time for more calls. If we don't get to you, I apologize again in advance. But in this hour, it'll give us more time to talk to listeners.
I'm really happy that they acquiesced, because that term "we" does involve me, right? If when you said to them, "We're done," I would have been done too, right?
Well, no, I didn't want to make it preemptive on your behalf. I was suggesting that.
But you did.
I had a little leverage to get this done based on what they pay me to do this show. I figured this was easy.
What's your week been like? Crazy? Normal? Mundane?
No, actually, I've been on the road. This horrible storm that's been enveloping the country has actually been chasing me. I took my son and my son-in-law and a couple of their friends to the Super Bowl because my son's a big Giants fan, and that's secondary to him. He's a hockey fan first and foremost, let the record be straight. But I, like some dads who sometimes get grandiose, a month ago said to him while we were watching a Giants game, if the Giants make it to the Super Bowl, of course I'll take you.
Fully considering that they wouldn't make it, right?
Fully expecting that they wouldn't make it. And as we were watching that overtime field goal in Green Bay, his first sharp glance to me was, okay, when are we going? So I was left to scramble. But thankfully, I have a relationship with Commissioner Goodell. We were able to get tickets. So we spent the weekend in Phoenix, and then I went to Denver to spend the day with the Avalanche, and I went to the game on Monday night against the Coyotes. And then from there, and there was a snowstorm, we just barely got out of there and went to Nashville, where I spent the day and went to the game against Carolina on Tuesday night. And they made an announcement. Nobody was allowed to leave the arena because of the tornado warnings. The sirens were going off.
I didn't know that.
And there was a fair amount of tragic devastation through the South and in Tennessee. And our sympathies and our prayers go out to everybody there who was affected. There was a lot of destruction, and a number of people were killed. And it's pretty scary. And that was the same storm in a different form from the one that was in Colorado.
Wow.
And then I got back and went to Washington, D.C. yesterday with the Ducks to visit President Bush at the White House. And so that was my week. And now I'm here with you. So what could be bad?
What caliber seats does a hockey commissioner get from a football commissioner?
Oh, good. We had no complaints. They took good care of us.
How about the did you celebrate your anniversary? It was your 15th anniversary as commissioner. Does a commissioner of a major league sport on a 15th anniversary get gifts, presents, and stuff like that?
As a general rule, no. Although there were some people who called and sent emails, and I actually did get a couple of presents. I'm not a big fan, for a variety of personal and professional reasons, of noting either anniversaries or birthdays. The only exception to that, obviously, is my wife and kids' birthdays and our wedding anniversary. But as it relates to my own birthday and other calendar milestones, I'm not really a big fan of those.
I'm not either.
I like looking ahead, not looking back. But having said it, it was a lovely day, and actually my son and my son-in-law happened to take me out to dinner because my wife was off doing other things.
And we're looking forward to taking your calls. Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, is set to go with phone calls and emails. Our phone number again, 877-NHL-NXM, 877-645-6696. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. Let's touch base on the Winter Classic for a second. Everything's kind of died down. I'm sure the debriefing is still going. What takes place first, the when or the where?
Actually, it's both. It's a series of moving parts that you have to put together all at once. The where may be a function of the when. And we have no shortage of interest. At least seven or eight clubs have come. I'm doing that number off the top of my head. Have contacted us to express interest. And as I said, we'll probably almost certainly do one. Next year.
Next year.
I think so. Uh-huh. I mean, we don't. I'm not making a formal announcement. We don't have a when. We don't have a where. But if I had to guess, I would think that first and foremost, we're going to focus on trying to do one next year.
Right.
Maybe that's a better way of phrasing it, because we've got to get the logistics to put together. In my own mind's eye, I think if we could do one next year, it would be nice. We don't want to overdo these. We don't want to do too many. But maybe we can use next year as an opportunity to build on the great event we had this year. Again, having said that, it's not done until it's done, and where we would play, which teams would be involved, the television
sure.
arrangements, the calendar, all of that has to be brought together.
What kind of lead time for an event like the Winter Classic is required? Well, I mean, at some point you got to drive the stake in the ground. What would that day be?
Well, certainly more than we did last year. Last year we didn't announce it until October, almost October, beginning of the season. By the way, and as part of what we need to do, this has to be coordinated with the Players Association, and we have to make sure that whatever the arrangements are, that they're comfortable with, and that they've had ample opportunity to give us whatever input they think is important mm-hmm. for us to be aware of. My own view is we would like to be in a position by the time we announce the schedule, which we do in early July, to be announcing at that time, certainly by that time, if not sooner, but certainly by that time, if we're playing an outdoor game, where and when, because that would clearly be one of the highlights of the calendar. We did it late last year, and I'm grateful to a lot of people's hard work and a little bit of luck that it came together as quickly as it did.
I can only imagine that one guy that is begging for a greater lead time is the guy that I saw in Buffalo that hadn't shaved in about 11 days, hadn't really had a square meal or 6 or 7 hours of sleep in a night, is the ice guru for the National Hockey League, Dan Craig. Was he on hands and knees praying, or was he just beating on walls saying, we got to have more lead time?
Well, it was neither as emotional or as simple as that. We had a candid debriefing, and Dan took us through the variety of issues that he went through, and let's say that next time we will do it with more time than he had last time, because he did an amazing job.
Oh, he's unreal.
But if a couple of things, including the weather in the build-up period, went wrong, he wouldn't have been able to make it, and it wouldn't have been his fault. And to say this backwards from what I just said, what he did was Herculean mm-hmm. to get it done, and we're grateful for all of his efforts.
I'm just feel fortunate to have had a chance to get to know Dan Craig over the years as a broadcaster, walking into buildings and seeing him at the Zamboni entrance all over the place, especially in the playoffs, and stopping and talking to him. And he's really helped to help me with so many issues, to help the fans with understand what goes into getting especially a warm climate rink ready for a playoff game.
I mean,
it's amazing. You don't just turn on a switch and make ice.
No, it is a function of a number of variables, including the composition of the water, which varies from place to place, the temperature in the building, obviously, and the humidity in the building. And what happens to a building when it's hot and humid outside, even if you've got it at 55 or 60 degrees prior to opening the doors, and then you open the doors and 18,000 people come in and they bring with them all of their heat and the humidity from the outside. It is a complicated process.
Let's open the phone lines.
That sounds like a good thing to do. Let's start with John in Seattle. You're with Bill and Gary on XM204.
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Whenever I meet hockey people, a lot of times you hear the comment made, well, if I were the commissioner of the NHL, I would change the size of the neutral zone, change touch icing, everybody's got their idea. which, you know, of course, assumes that there's no competition committee, you know, board of governors, whatever, you know, whatever limits the power of the commissioner. But I thought, wonder what Gary would like to change if he didn't have to run it by everyone else.
Well, first of all, we would have changed all the changes or made all the changes that we did 2.5 years ago coming back from the work stoppage. The competition committee, the general managers, the governors, and I were involved, as was Coley Campbell, who runs hockey operations, of course, and his staff, in all the elements of putting that package together. So that the current package of rules reflects something that I, as well as the other people, I'm not taking credit for them, but I was involved in the process and was fully supportive of the changes. I think they've worked very well. What you're seeing over the last 2.5 years is an amazing adaptation by our highly skilled coaches and players to a new way of playing the game, if you will, a different flow to the game, and they've adapted incredibly quickly. We didn't anticipate that they would be able to do it as fast as they did, and they've done it. And as a result, you're seeing fewer penalties and a little less scoring because there are less power play goals for the most part. The one thing that I think we need to continue to look at is the goaltender position. Our goaltenders are bigger physically than they've ever been. The equipment they wear is bigger than it was 20, 30 years ago. So there's less open space to shoot at. And while we want our goaltenders to be demonstrating the great skill they have, and we certainly don't want them to get injured, we need to see if we can make their equipment a little smaller to expose a little bit more of the net. In concept, your equipment should protect them from injury, not protect the net from a puck going in.
Okay, the Goaltenders Union is online too now.
But why don't we take Brian from Ontario? You're on XM 204, Brian.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. What about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Okay, first off, I'm a subscriber to the NHL Center Ice Online, and I love it. I'm in the Toronto region, so those games get blacked out, but I get to watch my beloved Sens team.
Good.
And I was just wondering, I have night classes on Tuesdays, and I work every Thursday night, so I end up missing their games. And it'd be great if the games were posted shortly after the conclusion of the game. I was a subscriber to the MLB TV last summer, and the games seem to go up within an hour to 2 hours after the game. And for the Center Ice Online, it seems to be like 2 to 3 days. And I was just wondering if you were planning on posting the games up sooner, or if you have any other plans to, you know, get those games up faster, any other solutions to it.
This is the first time I've heard this request / complaint, and it's a legitimate one. And off the top of my head, I don't know the answer as to why it's taking us so long. If it's from a technology standpoint, then maybe there are things we can do to beef it up. If it's a question of protecting the rights, which it may be, of the local broadcast, because the local broadcasters traditionally have a window of exclusivity to reshow games, that may be the reason.
Okay.
But I will take a look into it, and if there's something we can do about it to speed up getting you replay opportunities, then obviously that's something we should be doing to improve the product.
That'd be great. I'd really love that.
Let me take a look into it, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for your support. Let's talk to John in Philly. John, you're on XM 204.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you, Commissioner, for taking my call. And I was curious your take on the refereeing, the officiating. My opinion, I watched, especially last night, I watched what was called in the crease going to the net with Scott Hartnell, which I think Dave Jackson was very wrong on the call. I think the calls have been somewhat good, but somewhat very bad. And I have to tell you, one official that sticks out to me, and I've seen him officiate a lot of games, sir, is this Eric Frelotte. He's too inconsistent for me. And I'll tell you, sir, I spent a lot of money to go to these games, and watching consistency and on-ice officiating, it really is a shame. And I don't really think it's done a good job this year.
Well, I appreciate the feedback. From our standpoint, and I think everybody will agree, officiating in hockey is harder than any other sport. In addition to the fact that you've got to be a great skater, it's happening faster and nonstop than any other sport. And our guys are called upon to make split-second decisions hundreds of times in the course of a game, either to make a call or not make a call. Having said that, we work very closely with the officials. We do not tolerate inconsistency. We strive for perfection, but there is a human element to our game on all aspects, coaching, playing, and officiating. The officiating is never as bad as somebody rooting for a team thinks. Now, I was tied up, and I did not see last night's game, but, Bill, you saw and?
I saw it. I saw the play, and the rule book clearly states that when a goalie has the puck in his possession, a player can't bulldoze him or push him into the net. That's what happened on the play. There were a couple of things that ended up being confusing for the people that were watching that game. Number one, the whistle actually came blew after the puck crossed the goal line, but the referee is allowed that discretion to make the decision mentally and then physically get his whistle up to his mouth to blow the whistle. So if the decision had been made that the play was dead, regardless of when the whistle blows, the play is dead. The other thing is, Dave Jackson made the right call, but may have opened up a can of worms by going over and getting on the headset at the penalty box because it's a non-reviewable call. So had Dave Jackson just put the puck back in play, maybe done a quick explanation to the two coaches what had happened and put it back in play, we might not be talking about it now. But it dragged on because Dave went over and got on the headset. In reality, it wasn't a reviewable play.
Well, and in fact, I think he went to the headset because he was looking to make sure that he was giving the PA announcer the right explanation as to what went on, not to replay it because, as you said, it was non-reviewable. One thing that I think a lot of our fans don't understand, and it's a point that you alluded to, and we probably have to do a better job of getting it out there, is this concept of an official can blow the whistle in his head, and that's the basis for making a call, as opposed to when the whistle actually blows. Unlike the clock and the light, when it goes to zero, that's it. There's a point in time where you say, okay, the puck's frozen, but you got to get the whistle blown, and there's a split second or part of a second delay. And that's why sometimes when fans think a goal's been scored and it gets waved off, it's because the official, in his mind, knew that the play was dead.
If it's 3 seconds, you got a problem. Right. If it's a split second, then we understand.
And that's exactly right. Let's talk to Drew in Springfield, Mass. You're on XM 204. How are you?
Hey, how are you guys? Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to make this, actually it's a suggestion as opposed to a question. I wanted to make this suggestion to the NHL for a good couple of years. The way the standings are listed or printed is, I don't want to say confusing, but it takes a lot to find out where your team stands as far as whether they're, you know, gaining ground or making the playoffs or whatever. And especially this year with very little points in between. What I'm talking about is you've got the conferences, and it's just confusing with all the different teams. And you basically have to take a calculator out and try to figure out where, you know, the teams stand. And I work with some people who don't really follow hockey very well, but they're kind of new to the sport, and it's really confusing for them. Now, is there a standard way that they could set something up where you can see how well the teams are doing and where they stand, say, each day, as opposed to, again, getting the calculator out and figuring out, you know, where your teams are?
Yes, there is, and I'll start by apologizing for any confusion to the extent there may be. If you go to NHL.com and you click on the standings, you can get the standings by division, and then you can click and get it by conference, so you can get it both ways. We think that the divisional play and the divisional races and who's going to win first place is very important. Just look at the Southeast Division and the fact that there are four teams within, I think, 2 points of each other, and one of them is going to get seeded third, which is something that people would like to debate too. But you can also get the conference-based playoff races by clicking on that button on NHL.com as well.
Okay, but I mean, is this something that I'm talking about basically the newspapers, and I don't know whether they print it differently in Canada, but I mean, is there a way that they could print it this way also?
Some newspapers do it both ways. Some newspapers do it based on conference, and some newspapers do it based on division. What I think traditionally happens, as we get closer to the end of the regular season, you'll see it both ways in a newspaper. Newspapers in this digital age are finding that they have less and less newspaper to print on, and space is tight, and so they make decisions as to what is the best way to show information. If you have access to the internet, all of the websites, not just ours, tsn.ca, foxsports.com, Tom, on and on and on. They all do the standings both ways. So digitally online, you can get it both ways.
But I share that frustration because at different times of the year, and yes, newspapers at some point as we get closer to the playoffs will put in the conference standings. But even at Christmas, I like to, if I pick up a newspaper, I want to know how many points is Team X out of the playoffs. And well, how big a cushion does Team Y have above the line?
And how many hours do you ever find yourself away from being online? Rarely. And so you're online, and this is something that the wonders of the digital age and unlimited information can give you. Why don't we go to Scott in Bridgeport, Connecticut? Scott, you're on XM 204.
Hi, gentlemen.
How are you?
Howdy.
Not too bad. I'm fairly new customer, and I've been listening every day since I've been a customer.
Well, thank you for being a customer, and thank you for being a fan.
Of course. And, Bill, I have to say, listening to the show, I really do miss your color work during games. You brought a lot of insight and enjoyment over the years.
Well, you never know where I'm going to show back up, do you?
No.
Like the proverbial bad penny, he keeps coming up. No, that's true. Bill does a great job.
Well, if you just keep listening on NHL Radio and on XM, you'll be able to hear me because I've got a full slate of games as we head into the final portion of the season.
And that was a good plug from your cousin. Scott, what's up?
Commissioner, I have a question.
Sure.
For the longest time, I wanted to get involved in scouting. Several years ago, I worked in the AHL for the Beast in New Haven, and I worked directly for the coaches. And I caught the scouting bug back then, and when the team left, I hit a bit of a lull. And last year, I signed on to a program from Sports Management Worldwide. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
I know the name.
The hockey GM and scouting course. I completed that, and I'm currently in an advisory program from ISS. And I guess my question to you is there anything that the league does with central scouting as far as, like, recruitment or internship or anything along those lines? Anything you could share with me?
Well, why don't you send me your resume and I will pass it on to the appropriate people at Central Scouting. And I think, yeah, sure, why not?
Excellent.
Okay,
right.
I'm not promising you a position, but I'm promising you that the right people will see your resume.
Sure, no, I appreciate that.
Good, and thanks for all of your interest. Let's go. Thank
you, guys.
Thank you. Kyle in Mississippi, you're on XM 204.
How you doing, guys? I love the show. Basically, my question is for the commissioner. I have Dish Network, and I cannot get the NHL Network. I know people that have it, and I really enjoy watching it when I've gotten the chance to. And I was wondering if it's going to be coming to Dish Network anytime soon.
Actually, it's on Dish Network if you have high definition. They have the high def feed, and because of channel capacity, they will, by the start of next season, I believe, be putting us on standard definition as well. So it's just a question of timing, but we do have a relationship with Dish TV, and the games are and will be available.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by a very special guest, the host of Hockey Night in Canada, Ron McLean. We'll take more of your calls, answer your emails. We appreciate your patience. Hang in there. The NHL Hour, NHL Home Ice, XM 204, and NHL.com continues in a moment. Show on MLB Home Plate, XM 175. Now back to NHL Hour with Gary Bettman.
And if there's someone you can't live without,
or the musical group, the NHL Hour, the NHL Hour from New York. Gary Bettman, Bill Clement. Before we get to our special guest, and I want to thank our callers for hanging in there. We'll get to your calls as soon as we can, but we want to remind everybody that this Saturday, starting at noon, it is the 8th annual day-long celebration of the game that really unites the country from Winkler, Manitoba to New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. Hockey Day in Canada is this Saturday. You'll meet the players, coaches, the fans that make Hockey Canada's game. complete with a triple header featuring all six Canadian teams in action. The Red Wings take on the Maple Leafs at 3 Eastern, 2 Central, and noon Pacific. At 7 Eastern, it's the Oilers and the Flames, or the Canadians and the Senators. Then the Avalanche visit the Canucks in the nightcap at 10 Eastern. And our special guest will be extremely busy this Saturday, Gary.
Yes, he will. And welcome to the NHL Hour, Ron McLean, host of Hockey Night in Canada.
Gary, it's a treat to be on, and Bill, you'd be really comfortable here in Winkler. Their junior A franchise is the Flyers, and of course it's black and orange, and they'd love to have you out here. And Gary, I have to congratulate you on the show. I've really enjoyed it. I was telling you, you're not interrupting your guests enough. I don't understand that.
Well, actually, that's a point. Excuse me while I interrupt you. You know, for people who have seen you and I together on Hockey Night in Canada, we've had some legendary interviews, or you've had some legendary interviews of me, but one good thing is I never interrupt my guests, and I will not make an exception in your case. So I'm going to let you answer the questions that I ask you. So first off, for people, particularly in the United States, who really don't know a lot about you, other than you've been the host of Hockey Night in Canada or what now for 20 years, tell them a little bit about yourselves, your background, where you grew up, and how you got involved in hockey, and how you wound up as one of the preeminent television stars in Canada.
Well, don't let me forget to talk a little bit about that interview style in 2003 when we close off the segment. But
No, this is my interview.
I'll make you a pact. I'll answer your question so long as you ask me that one at the end about 2003 in New Jersey. It's probably the funniest anecdote with respect to you and me in our interviews. Anyhow, Gary, Dad was in the Air Force. Both my mom and dad are from Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, and they both entered the armed forces. That was a career path many chose in Nova Scotia back in their day in the 40s. And they met in Europe and were married in Metz, France, and I was born in Zweibrücken, Germany, two base, where they were stationed overseas, and that was in 1960. And we had a nice middle-class military upbringing. I was all over the country hopscotching. I was an only child, and as such, you are forced to make friends. And when you're an only child, you tend to speak adult at an earlier age because mom and dad are your companions around the dinner table. So that helps you with your broadcasting, I truly believe. And when I was 10, Dad got out in Red Deer, Alberta. He found work working for the RCMP, our FBI of the North. And I really had no ambition to get into broadcasting. I had three high school buddies who were part-time operators at a radio station. One was sick. He recommended Ron McLean. Call Ron. He'll figure this out, and he'd appreciate the $3 an hour. And that's how I broke in 76. And one thing just led to another. Unlike you with your Cornell and everything else that you did, Gary, I sort of was cut out for it, I guess, with gift of the gab, and lots of people have it. They just don't get that opportunity. And it snowballed into an opportunity in 1984 to host the Calgary Flames game, and 2 years later to Hockey Night in Canada. It was really a chance to be in the right place at the right time for me.
Well, you know, being in the right place in the right time helps, but you have to have the right skill set, and obviously you do. Talk about your relationship with Don Cherry. It seems like you guys couldn't be closer if you were brothers.
You know, and from the moment I started at Hockey Night in Canada, he really got me through the first 2 years because I was 26 years old. I was probably from too small a town and too young, ignorance is bliss, that I really wasn't that spooked by the idea of hosting Hockey Night in Canada, but I was a kid. And Don really got me over the hump the first year and a half, and I remember the first show. He came roaring into the studio at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, and we used to come out of there at 8 o'clock Eastern, and I wondered what he'd be like in real life, and he says, "Ron boy, you're from Calgary, eh?" And I said, "Well, Red Deer, Alberta's my hometown, Don, but Calgary's where I've been working, that's right." He says, "Well, that's just great." He says, "You come down here to Toronto from Calgary, we all say, what a wonderful fella. I go up to Calgary, tell them I'm Toronto, they call me a jerk. Did you know that?" And, of course, that's true, but I didn't know what to say. I'm just meeting him. I'm 26 years old, and he shook my hand. He says, "Anyway, don't be nervous, kid. There's only 8.5 million watching you tonight." And he went off to say hi to Bob Cole, Harry Neal, and you knew he was full of mischief, and I could tell he was just kibitzing. And he got me through the first show. I was a deer in headlights, and he little things, Gary and Bill, that he would say to me, like, as an example, it's one of the weird ones, but he said, "Ron, don't be down at the bench during the practice if you can avoid it. I mean, sometimes you have to go get the story, but try not to be invading the dressing room and the bench and the places the players are that, that you know, it's kind of sacred to them, because then when they see you, they'll truly be excited to see you." And that was a little tip early, and it can't work for everybody. Some of us are reporters, and it's just, you know, our lot in life that we have to kind of get in the face and in the place. But that helped, and he would always get after me. Don't say the hapless Toronto Maple Leafs. Don't kick them when you're... And he had a great way of doing it. He'd say, you know, that's not really your style, Ron. Even if it was my style, as you know, Gary, even if it was my style, he'd present it in a way that would teach me to be a little more upbeat with the teams and the players. And he just... We're great friends through thick and thin. We've been, you know, like you find yourself, maybe Bill Daly, you get in the crosshairs. You go through a lot together, and that's been the case for us.
Well, it's clear that you guys are good friends. Is it true that you help pick out his clothing?
Doug Waite, I always remember in the 2006 Stanley Cup, he was, Doug been around now for about 15, 20 years when he went into that Stanley Cup against Edmonton. Game one, he says, I was literally nauseous in the room before. I had never felt so queasy going on the ice for a game. And I got on, I came through the tunnel, and there was Don Cherry down at the end of the arena in this ridiculous bedspread of a jacket, which was mauve and blue. And he said, and I actually laughed out loud, and it absolutely put me at ease. And from there on in, I was home and cool. So I have nothing to do with it, as you can well imagine.
There are some who suggest, and for our listeners, we're talking to Ron McLean, host of Hockey Night in Canada. There are some who suggest that there is a little bit of bias with you and or Don in terms of either rooting for the Leafs, because you do one of their games just about every week, or in terms of taking sides occasionally between management and the players. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, I've told you clearly that I've had a bias about the salary cap, and that's not fair to you, but it's probably not fair to the viewer. But my line to you is always, I love it when the Yankees roll into town and it's one guy after another that's a big name and there's no limit on. I always ask that fundamental question, whether it's right or wrong, and you always say it can't be about principles, it's got to be about bottom line. But I always ask, you know, why would you put an owner in a position where they can't pay the player what they want? But that's neither here nor there. Your system has proved to be a very popular one with the fans who love the parity. I can't argue that. They do enjoy the closeness of the races. So you had a point, and I try to make a different one, and that's that. As far as the Leafs go, I think Don, is very cognizant of, he loves to see someone in Edmonton wearing an Oilers sweater. He lives in Toronto, so he loves to see the kids in their Leafs sweater. He's a big fan of, I don't know if it's parochialism, but he loves to support where you're from, be it Canada, be it Ontario. He's very patriotic in that regard. And that's why, in my case, I was a Leaf fan as a kid, but you know we get so hung up on issues that we have no time to be partisan in our broadcasting.
Oh, no, not you. But let me ask you, you have at occasion been critical of officiating, and this isn't the tough question, so you can relax. You were an amateur referee yourself. And we actually let you work a preseason game. Tell us about that experience and the comparison between what you did as an amateur official and what it was work, even though it was in a preseason game, what it was like working at the NHL level.
Well, the first thing that obviously I had to go out and make sure my backward skating was up to snuff, because it came in September, right at the start of your season, and when you're a player and a referee, I played a lot of defense as a kid, so my backward skating isn't an issue, but I knew I had to have that really be on top of my game with my backward skating because of the two-man system. All the refereeing I did for 23 years, which was a minor professional, I refereed a lot in the United States Hockey League, the Colonial Hockey League, and all the way down through Junior A and University and such. It was the three-man system with a solo referee, and you were always essentially skating forward, often caught horribly out. But when I went into Pittsburgh Buffalo with Maxima Finneganoff and Sidney Crosby and Daniel Briere, and you know what was weird is that John LeClair was the guy two guys that caught my eye with speed more than Crosby, Briere, or Finneganoff were Adam Mayer and John LeClair. They both, when they got steamrolling down, they're probably those guys that once they get up ahead of steam, they're scary fast. And I just think in John LeClair's case, with his back, he couldn't bring that every night. But I found it weird that you were so far ahead of the play that the speed didn't translate. It was like we always get frustrated with the inability to show speed on television. And for the referee, although don't tell Billy McCreary, it can happen, you can get caught up. But it just seems so easy to be ahead of the play and not get caught up in it. The only thing is that things do move at a hurricane spin once you're in the offensive or attacking zone, and you have to really be on the bit to stay out of the way of the players, you know, and that would have been the case in the three-man system, too. So I found the speed less than I was expecting, and after that, as you know, in every walk of life, I mean, the fundamental challenge remains the same, whether you're doing a major midget AAA game or the National Hockey League. And the one thing that, when I'm critical of the officials, it's never the officials. I'm critical of the standard. I watched a guy referee here the other night, a guy named Graham Heather, did a Junior A Tier 2 game between Winkler and Selkirk, and he had what I consider the touch. And, you know, Gary, this back to when you were being interviewed by Peter Mansbridge during the lockout of 2004, and there was a little exchange at the start of the interview with Peter. He says, "Have you spoken to Bob Goodenough?" And you said, "Well, I'm willing. We're prepared to sit down anytime, any place." And Peter says, "Well, why don't you pick up the phone?" And you said, "Well, Peter, you have to understand, collective bargaining is an art form." And it was a great answer and the correct answer, and I always say that's the thing about refereeing. And that somewhere in this whole discussion, the art of refereeing is a very difficult thing to explain, just like you, with my eyes glazing over as you teach me about collective bargaining. I know for 23 years when the referee really has the respect of the guys in the game. And this guy the other night, this Heather guy, spoke well all through the game. You could tell the players enjoyed him. You could tell everything was going because the referee had that touch. And I just don't want it to be so black and white that they can't have that touch. And that's the point I try to make. But even that isn't extremely popular. I think most fans, if you were to ask them, say, if it's in the book, call it.
I'm still trying to figure out how we got from you officiating a preseason game to the lockout, but that's a different story. But because you were so artful in your answer, I'll now let you describe to our listeners, we're talking to Ron McLean on XM204, about 2003 at the finals in New Jersey.
Yeah, this was a great, we'd had a funny one in Dallas over, you were giving me heck for the Humidex, and you were totally right. I'd been complaining about we might have bad ice in the third period, and you said, "Why do you have to be so negative? It's game seven, Sakic, Modano, Awa, Belfour," and Grapes really got me on the coach's corner, thanks to you. He made up for it. And then we had our argument about two-man system in 2002, so you walk in, Bill, you'll get a kick out of this. We're sitting in the dressing rooms at the old Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, and it's just before the game, and Gary walks in, and we talk a little bit, make nice for about 5 minutes, and then Gary says, we start discussing interviews, because I was going to have the commissioner on. He says, "You know, Ron, sometimes I come to the conclusion you think it's a great interview if I look bad." And I said, "Oh, no, Gary, nothing could be further from the truth." And Don Cherry's sitting there on a little chair about 3 feet away. He says, "Oh, yes, you do, Ron. You love it when the commissioner looks bad." And you just, you know, stir in the pot, and it was really funny. And Gary said, "Ron, it's this three questions, you know, that should be your limit on any one subject, because you have a habit of going on and on. And when you do, it's boring for the viewer, it's boring for the interviewee. Just try, and if you don't get what you're looking for after the third try, you know, move on." So I said, "Well, I must be a jerk here, because maybe people are starting to think I'm..." So I'll do it your way. And I did it Gary's way, and the interview was nice and everything else. And we get in the car to go back to the hotel, and Bob Cole says, "Well, that was nothing." The interview was nothing. I used to look forward to those interviews.
great theater. So do you make predictions? Who do you see as of today in the conference finals?
That's a heck of a question. I think the Ducks in Detroit in the West, and I think the Ducks will win the Stanley Cup, so I don't know why I think that. I just have that feeling. I've had a weird thing about Carolina all season, even though they're going through tremendous inconsistencies. And this will be they're a great special teams game, but I kind of like Carolina and maybe the New York Rangers in the East. How's that for a surprise? And then I would see... I'll just stick with my gut, Carolina and the Ducks in the Stanley Cup.
We'll see if you're right. Ron, the producers, as you know, are telling me it's time to break it off. You and I could go on for hours. Bill, do you want to add something before we let Ron go?
Yeah, I'm going to slip in, Ron. First of all, you're the guy that I tried to emulate for a couple of years when I was hosting. I've always had great appreciation for your work. And I just wonder what part of Hockey Day in Canada you enjoy the most.
Just the rink rats, Bill. Just like we all do at the end of the day, and that's one thing, Gary, you've always said, even when you get frustrated with me, is you love our passion for the game. And that goes above any production value, any music, anything else. On Saturday, it'll all be about these unbelievable people who dedicate their lives to coming to the rink rats. And that's the ultimate treat in the game.
Oh, and I think you're a rink rat as well, and I say that with the utmost respect. Thank you for being with us, and enjoy Hockey Day.
Keep up the great work, Gary. Have you heard that before?
Not from you, Ron.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
That is Ron McLean, the host of Hockey Night in Canada, and a man that will be all over Canadian television on Saturday as Canada celebrates Hockey Day in Canada. We're going to step out. When we come back, Gary will take your calls, answer more of your emails, all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, and NHL.com.
This is NHL Hour. It's not your typical hour of hockey talk, and it's exactly what you want. NHL Home Ice, XM204.
All right, welcome back. Okay, Gary, name the group. Name the lead guitarist.
I don't know the lead guitar. James Gang.
There you go. We'd be Joe Walsh.
That's
right.
Right? Oh, absolutely.
I believe it was. Joe
but
Walsh
I'm,
and James
I'm
Gang.
More focused on Joe Walsh and the Eagles.
Oh, there you see. It's always see. Collective bargaining is an art form, isn't it? Hey, we want to take a second here to let everybody know and remind everybody that this Sunday, the NHL on NBC, tremendous matchup. The defending champs, the Anaheim Ducks, take on the cream of the crop in the regular season. Let's face it, nobody's been close to the Detroit Red Wings. It's live at 3:30 Eastern. You can check your local listings for the station and time in your area. We'll get to your calls in just a second, but I think we're going to go email first.
Well, right? I'm going to take an email. I'm going to read an email, which is relevant to our discussion with Ron McLean. It's from Craig in Tampa, and he says, why can't the entire Hockey Day in Canada programming on the CBC be shown on NHL Center Ice in the United States? That's a very good question, Craig, and the answer is it will be. It's on Center Ice programming. It'll be on from 12 noon until 1:30 a.m. So for those of you who have Center Ice, you can sit and watch all three of the games, all of the surrounding activities, and if you're not a Center Ice subscriber, please call your cable provider or your satellite provider and sign up. Let's go back to the phones.
Yes, sir.
Makes sense to me. How about Lou in Pittsburgh? Lou, you're on XM204.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a season ticket holder in Pittsburgh, and I'm calling on behalf of my fellow season ticket holders that sit next to me. And whenever there's one of the frustrating things, the only frustrating thing about actually going to the game and seeing the live action is not being able to see all the replays. And, you know, especially on those controversial calls where they're going to the replay booth or, you know, on a big hit, sometimes they don't show it. So, and of course, we watch a lot of hockey as well. And one of our neighboring friends in Pennsylvania, we watch a lot of those games because they're in our division. And we hear a lot of fan reaction going on during those controversial calls. So basically, it sounds like some arenas are allowed to show replays of controversial things, and others, as in Pittsburgh, they never show it. The only replays they show are goals. So my question for you, Mr. Bettman, is there a league rule about showing replays of controversial or sometimes not even controversial calls in the arenas?
Well, actually, the way you've asked the question, which I'll answer in a second, about, well, it seems the rules vary from arena to arena. I assure you they don't. Everybody operates under the same standards, and what gets shown as a general rule is determined by game operations for the particular team in their arena. We don't permit replays of things that are either derogatory or intended to incite the crowd. But for the most part, you get to see everything that was happening in the building. The one thing we don't allow is while we're doing video review, we don't want the replays being shown as it's going on because we don't want anybody who's involved in that process influenced by the crowd reaction. We need to do our business, get the call right, and then the arena can show the determining video that will show whether or not it was a goal or an old goal. Let's go to Brent in Minneapolis. You're on XM204, Brent.
Commissioner, thank you for taking my phone call. A thought about realignment as Mike Modano is in town this evening to be honored by the Wild as being the all-time American scorer. This thought, in terms of creating a more natural rival between Minnesota and Dallas and shrinking both the Pacific Division and the Northwest Division from three time zones to two, in that putting Dallas in the Northwest and Vancouver in the Pacific would create divisions that were then shrunk to two time zones and maybe allow more of the games on television to be shown in prime time in the more eastern parts of the country. Any thought on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting suggestion. The flip side of that is if you move Vancouver to the Pacific, then you're taking them away in divisionally. And in terms of the number of games that are being played away from their more traditional rivals, namely Calgary and Edmonton. The tough thing about realignment, if you're going to make a change, is for every move you want to make to help one club, you then have to make a move that maybe another club won't like. So, for example, I always get the question about Detroit being an Eastern time zone team playing in the West. Why can't they go in the East? Well, that requires somebody in the East to go to the West. And interestingly enough, Columbus is also in the Eastern time zone and a Western Conference team. So Detroit isn't even the most easternmost team geographically. Unless a team moves or relocates or there's expansion, and we're not doing either right now, I think it would be difficult to get a consensus on doing any realignment absent a compelling reason that would result, as I said, either from expansion or realignment. And I always have to say it again, no, we're not doing either right now. Let's go to the next caller, Alan in New Jersey. You're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary. How can we help you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. At the beginning of the season, as everyone remembers, with the Steve Downey and Jesse Bolarisic from behind, they've basically, the checks from behind, I've seen them continue. They haven't really gotten any better. Besides longer suspensions, how do you stop the players from doing these hits?
Well, actually, and I think Bill will chime in, and we're sorry if we cut you off, but I think we lost you from your cell phone. The types of hits Downey and Bolarisic have stopped. And that's because we've reacted to them so sternly and strongly. Coley Campbell's done a good job with the long suspensions. You know, body checking is still allowed in this game. And particularly when you're up against the boards, you have to protect yourself. Doesn't mean it's open season to hit players any way you want. But the types of dangerous checks and hits to the head we've been trying to get out of the game, I think, as the season progressed, have been dramatically reduced.
They have. And the numbers back that up. The first 25 games of the season, not only in numbers of suspensions, but total games for the suspensions, the severity of the infractions compared to the second 25 games of this season, the numbers are down dramatically. I actually looked at an entire list of those, the suspensions, the number of games, and the bottom line is the players seem to be getting it, and coaches are now starting to preach to their players. It's a process, and it's not an overnight process, but I think the players are buying in. Teams are buying in, and I think the sport is benefiting from it. And listen, the isolated incidents are the big ones that everybody remembers. If you look at the whole as opposed to just a couple, it ain't that bad at all right now.
Doug in Michigan, you're on XM 204. What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call. I've been experiencing a problem with center ice on the Dish Network, and I'm wondering if you could offer your observations. I'm a Leafs fan, and it seems like through a stretch there just before Christmas, many games were not being carried on center ice on Dish Network because they were on the NHL Network. And the NHL Network is carried on Dish, but only if you're in HD. And I don't have an HD receiver, so I don't have HD Dish Network. It just seems to me that center ice gets the black eye here instead of Dish Network. I had complained to them, but they kind of confuse it with a blackout issue. And it's not really a blackout issue. It's not like it's on Versus or on, you know what I'm saying?
I think I do. I'm going to have to look into it. The best suggestion I can make in the short term until Dish is in a position to carry the NHL Network and standard definition is let us look into it or else get HD equipment. And I'm being a little flip with that because I know it's expensive. Dish will be up to speed with the NHL Network, I believe, by the start of next season. But on the basis of the calls we're getting, I think we need to give Dish a call and let them know that there's a lot of interest in getting the NHL Network sooner rather than later. I don't know from a channel capacity standpoint that there's anything they can do about it, but I think we're getting enough expressions of interest that we should relay it. Good question, and thank you for the interest. Paul in Ontario, you're on XM 204 with Bill and Gary. What can I do for you?
Well, I'd like to make a suggestion to shorten the length of a game. I know we're always looking to shorten the length of the game. I'd like to state the suggestion and then back it up with a couple of comments, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm wondering why, when we go to games, the netting at the end of the rinks is uniform in most rinks. When the puck goes up and hits that, why we don't continue the game? It happens 4 or 8 times per game. Obviously, I don't think you should be able to use it as a tactic, stepping over the red line, dumping it in, and having it hang up and putting the defenseman at risk. But once the play is established in the offensive zone, couldn't we just keep the play alive? And my other reason for keeping that suggestion is I know when NHL teams practice during their scrimmages, when the puck goes up and hits that netting, they continue playing. They don't stop their practices to drop the puck.
It's a good observation. I do believe that if we allowed the puck to play off the netting, it would be a tactic. And I also think the tactic would probably extend to deciding in certain buildings how tight or taut to make the netting so that the rebound would vary depending on which building you're in. I have no doubt that it would vary by building and that it would become a tactic. But it is an interesting thought.
Gary, we had Ron McLean on, and he will be part of Hockey Day in Canada. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention Hockey Day in Minnesota. That is coming this Saturday as well. And Saturday's game, the New York Islanders at the Minnesota Wild, is just part of a variety of activities celebrating hockey in the state of hockey. And this sets the stage for Hockey Weekend Across America, which is February 15 to 17. That's one weekend from this coming weekend, Hockey Day in Minnesota.
Sounds great. Doug in Phoenix, you're on XM204.
Hey, gentlemen, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. First of all, let me thank you both for all you've done for the game of hockey, Commissioner and Bill.
Thank you.
Good work. Bill, especially, we miss you, the play-by-play. I find myself going back to my old PS2 games and playing those so I can hear you and Gary Thorne do the play-by-play on that. My question, Commissioner, regarding the face mask in hockey now. I know we have the visors, and I know it's a Players Association issue. Is there any chance that they could be caged or something like that? We have so many facial injuries and, you know, high sticking, and we see it a lot. Is there any chance that something like that could come along?
Not without the consent of the Players Association. And the Players Association has made it clear that they believe that the players should have their own choice as to whether or not they wear shields. My own view, to echo the sentiment, is that the eyes are particularly vulnerable and they don't heal as well as skin and bones. And so I'm concerned about player eye protection. And frankly, I've suggested that since the players coming into the game at a major junior, for example, they're all wearing shields on the way in, we should grandfather everybody who's in the league to have choice and let the kids who are coming into the game keep them on, and it's no adjustment for them. What we're doing is, in effect, encouraging them at least tacitly to take it off. But again, this is a player decision, and it's something that we can't do without the consent of the players. Next caller is Michael in Detroit. Michael, you're on XM204.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I just had a question about the rental player issues, you know, with the UFAs at the trade deadline. Is this something that the league or the PA even wants to address? I mean, because I can see, you know, it really hurts teams like last year with, you know, Tkachuk and everything. That, you know, they trade away a lot of their future, and they got the guy for like 20 games or so, you know. I don't know if there's anything that can be done, like, you know, bumping them from a UFA to an RFA, or, you know, like an automatic 1-year extension if you trade a UFA. I mean, those are just examples.
Let me try and respond to it. The likelihood that the players would agree to be more restricted in the event they got traded is something that I don't think is going to happen. And I think the salary cap and the great competitive balance and the amazing races, if you look at the standings, I think we'll see a less active trading deadline than we will at this point. Let us take one more caller, Mark from New York. You've been on for a while. You're on XM204 with Bill and Gary.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm sorry I missed Ron. I really enjoy his show. My question really is, I live here in Long Island. I have cable vision, and I do have Centerize, which is excellent. But when I have an HD-compatible TV. But when I watch like NESN HD or CBC HD, it doesn't transmit as HD to my TV. Is there anything that can be done, or is that just the way it is?
It's a question of capacity, and it will improve over time as the cable operators and satellite operators get greater capacity to carry all the HD channels, because more and more of our games are in HD.
That last caller mentioned that he missed the Ron McLean interview. If you'd like to hear a replay of the show, you can go to NHL.com or iTunes to download the podcast. It will be up tomorrow. Another hour on the NHL Hour has flown by. Glad you were with us today. Coming up next on NHL Home Ice, In the Slot with Phil Esposito and Jim Taddy. Traveling this week, Gary? No?
Not for at least 2 days.
Very good. We'll see you next Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on XM 204.